Hey everybody. Thanks, Cheryl. We are here for Wake Up and Roar, Sat Song with Papaji. I've been sharing from the book of the same name by Eli Jackson Bear. So let's just let's open with a prayer. Yeah, my prayer is, you know, just to know the truth. And that, and to let that truth come through in these teachings, to come through me so that I can hear it, so that anybody listening can hear it. And so, you know, I just want to dedicate this hour to the realization of truth. Amen. Okay, so I'm doing a lot of eyeing because, as some of you may have heard me say last night, I got a lot percolating right now. So yeah, we'll just see what percolates up in this hour. Last week, I left off with, thank you, Cheryl. I might very well let you play a song for me if I feel a need to pause for longer than a few moments. But last week, we were just finishing up, these chapters aren't numbered, but it's the first chapter, the cry of freedom. And I read this statement in the at the end of course this is set up in question answer format, but I read this question and answer at the end of that first chapter, The Cry of Freedom, and I wasn't really comprehending what this statement was saying, and so I promised to look at that again today, and I have looked at it, and I think I know what's going on here. So without further ado, I'm wondering whether to back up first or just to read from where I am. So let me just read the question answer that kind of threw me, and I wasn't really sure what Papaji was saying to the questioner, but the questioner says, pardon me, the questioner says, it seems the only response to the desire, and that's the desire for freedom, the only response to the desire is to look within to where the mind originates, to go to the place where thoughts arise and stay with it. That is the response, isn't it? And Papaji says, okay, I will. I'm going to back up here just in just a second, Kathy. Thank you for that suggestion. And Papaji says, yes, you will unceasingly scan the mind, unceasingly, and you will know who you are. And I struggled with that last week. But I feel a little bit clearer on it, having, of course, reread this chapter a couple times and feel more comfortable with it. So let me just say that I think this refers to, you've got to take the chapter as a whole, but so let me see how far to back up. Let me just start with this portion. Papaji says, if you don't look for a thought, he's been encouraging this student, this questioner, to look for a thought. Keep on looking for thoughts, he says. And then he says, if you don't look for a thought, the thoughts will look for you. If you don't look, all the thoughts will attack you. Try. If you look for a thought, do you catch it? And the student says, they have disappeared. Papaji says, then when the thoughts have disappeared, who are you? this is the best answer you can give me, because the guy's silent. He says, this is the best answer you can give me. Stay as such. If you step out of the silence, there is trouble. You don't need anything. Eternity is here. Happiness is here. No death can enter this silence. No trouble can enter here. Step out, and there is samsara, the endless cycle of birth and death. No thought, no concept can enter here. All desires are met here in emptiness. You walk out chasing after desires, and they are never fulfilled. Let me read forward to this answer again, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. And so the questioner says, all my life, even as a little boy, the desire for freedom has been stronger than all other desires. It doesn't really seem to be a desire. It's more like a longing. This desire seems to pull me back, while the other desires seem to pull me out. This desire for freedom mysteriously seems to stay, where the other desires come and go and change with my thoughts. The desire for freedom is always there, burning. It seems to be deeper than the mind. Is this true? And Papaji says, this is the most intense desire. All other desires are on the surface. They rise and fall, you see. The desire for freedom is intense, and you must respond to it. When you respond, this desire will bring you back home. It will continue to trouble you if it is not fulfilled in this lifespan. This desire must be fulfilled, whether you like it or not. That is why you come here. What a farce! This desire follows you wherever you go, in whatever incarnation you take. It will not leave you. How did it push you here? You left your job and your business. Why did you have to come here? Just consider it. You must return home. How long can you stay at the market? And the student says, it seems the only response to the desire is to look within to where the mind originates, to go to the place where thoughts arise and stay with it. That is the response, isn't it? Papaji says, yes, you will unceasingly scan the mind, unceasingly, and you will know who you are. So that whole idea about scanning the mind, you know, what am I looking for, and, you know, and how does that work, and that seemed to be throwing me last week. But when I really look back up to where I started a moment ago, if you don't look for a thought, the thoughts will look for you. If you don't look, all the thoughts will attack you. Try. If you look for a thought, you catch it. And the guy says they have disappeared. And this is the mind scanning, the unceasing mind scanning that the Papaji is talking about, I believe. And so I practice a bit of that today, and he's right. I mean, if you really, and last week when I read it, it didn't seem to be true or possible or comprehensible to me. But to really look at where the thoughts arise from, to let me see if I can get it in words. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get this in words. You know, it's different from looking at the thoughts. You know, here's a thought. Oh, I see that thought. And then whatever we do with that traditionally in practice. It's to stop and look at that. This is so funny because I can't say it. I can, you know, I thought, gosh, when I get on there, I'm going to be able to explain this, but I don't know that that's going to happen. Because it's to look at that point where and I've heard people talk about it, and I think I mentioned this last week, although I wasn't really understanding it last week. You know, I've heard people talk about like looking at a like being a cat watching the hole in the wall for the mouse to appear. It's so if you look into that space inside of you, from where thoughts are normally generated, if you watch that space, no thoughts are generated. You know, on Sunday I said, you know, Eckhart Tolle had said that stillness, what is stillness? Stillness is consciousness without thought. So, and you know, frankly, I have struggled with this awareness, watching awareness thing, you know, for only for a couple years now, for as long as Regina's been talking about it, I guess. But to me, it seems like, it seems like, well, and when I was doing this practice this morning, I went, oh, geez, wonder if that's, if that's what Regina really means about awareness, watching awareness, because, you know, I want to, when we've talked about that in the past, I want to like kind of back up and watch, like, I don't know, watch my actions, you know, not from like they're occurring from me, but just watching what's occurring, to watch the thinking. But this seems like it's backed up a step before, and I don't know if you guys are getting this because I'm not sure I'm saying it, you know. And again, you know, my prayer is that the truth be heard. So, let me just sit for a second. Yeah. So all I can do is say, you know, just. If we sit here for a moment and we do that, and I'm going to be quiet for a moment and give us an opportunity to do that, but just to look before any thoughts, to look to that space in us where we normally see thoughts arise and see if you see anything. So I'm just going to be quiet for a minute while we do that. You know, and you know, I don't know how that worked for you, but what I see when I look to that space is that it will take some forward movement for me to create a thought. So it's not like, you know, looking back at a thought and going, well, where'd that come from? But it's like looking to the empty space before thought. And so, if you're constantly, unceasingly looking to the space before thought, you're not thinking. And you know, this isn't a new prescription. I mean, I was reading that from NTI last night. And this is NTI. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, it's on page 291 of NTI. It says, I ask you to lay your thinking aside. And with it, you lay aside all pretending that isn't truth. This is to make yourself an empty shell. So I think Papaji is talking about this exact same thing. About laying the thinking aside. And it's not like, I'm going to exchange this thought for a better thought. I'm going to figure out why this thought, you know, comes up all the time. I mean, all of these, I think, are useful practices. I think we're going to hear shoot, Papaji in a minute say they're not necessarily useful practices. But perhaps he means, you know, at some point they're not useful because you know, it's just a different way of reaching the truth. It's to reach that spot in us before thinking begins. And actually, I was really surprised when I really looked at that this morning that it was even possible to go to a place before thought. And I don't mean like, I sat down and I meditated for 30 minutes and finally the thoughts cleared. It's different. I'm tickled because I can't explain it. It's different from that. It's really, gee, okay, maybe I'll stop because I see that I'm not able to articulate it. But I can tell you, because I did it this morning, and I can do it consistently, with very little effort. Finding that place before thought. So I'm gonna leave that there since I am unable to articulate that any better, or at all. And move on to the next chapter, unless somebody has something that they want to say. And I would love to hear from you if you do. Thank you, Cheryl. I don't know that I can repeat that for the recording. Trying to think. When you said the word, I thought emptiness. And you said you experienced a real calm in the heart, and the experience of, did you say nothingness? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And I think that's and Papaji talks a lot about emptiness, and I think that that's what he's talking about. I think that's what NTI is talking about when it talks about the empty shell. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing. Anne, please take the mic. Hey, Anne. I was just trying to text you. we didn't hear you. I don't know if you were muted. would you like to try again? Yeah. Okay. I'll let go.
Can you hear this? You still oh, okay, good. Now you can. So what I was saying was when I thank you, Kathy. When I did the exercise, what came up for me is my mind was quiet and it was like this pregnant pause. It was like I was standing there waiting and nothing came. And the only thing that might have come is the thought, hey, this is working. But really nothing. And it was just this odd feeling of kind of a little bit of suspended animation, but also I can't say it was peaceful, but it was this kind of expectant emptiness. There was a I don't know, there was a certain quality to it that wasn't while there were no thoughts, there was certainly some kind of visceral feeling to it, and perhaps it was just me feeling into it and waiting to see if it was going to work. But it definitely felt like a kind of an anticipatory buzz that you get when you think something's about to happen, but you don't know what. So that's what came up.
Very cool. Thank you, Anne, for sharing. Yeah, very good description. Yeah, I mean, how cool is that? And then what we do see, what my experience was similar to Anne's, which is you see then, you do, the I thought does then come up, or might come up. And want to claim it and make it into something and say, oh, I'm doing it, or oh, wonder what's going to happen next, or but there's a place before the eye arises. That we all experienced. And you could see it's before the eye arises because then you get to see the eye come up, right? and begin its thoughts. Yeah. Very cool. Thanks, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you for participating in that with me. That was lovely. So, yeah, you can see the IRS, exactly. Yeah, cool. So, with that, let's, yeah, but I think it's going to be, you know, of course, here I am projecting myself into the future when I'm going to try this again. But anyway, so you know what? I'm just going to let that lay. I'm going to go to the next chapter. It's a very short chapter. It's one page, one paragraph, in fact. It's called Purification. And the questioner asks, and I go back and forth, guys, because they're not labeled. They're just in different font. So the questioner or the student asks, when I think of the notion of purification, it seems absolutely ridiculous. I wonder if you would speak about the value of purification. Many teachers tell their students to do more purification so that their realization is more powerful. And Papaji says, first of all, if you are to purify yourself, there must be some dust inside the teacher's mind, and he wants someone to wipe it out. There is, in truth, no dust at all. It is a waste of time to purify what is not dusty. From where has the dust accumulated? And where will you move this dust to? Where will you throw it? With which broomstick will you do it? If you look, there is no place for dust to alight. Better to dust out the concept of purification. You are that emptiness itself. Where can dust alight? And I'm just so thrilled, guys, that we did this whole little exercise, this huge exercise. Because without having had that experience, without having done that quote-unquote exercise, this would not make sense to me, this little chapter we just read, this little paragraph. But having read that, I mean, but having had that experience, you can see where Papaji is coming from. I mean, in that space before thought, what is there to be purified? What is there in that emptiness or that nothingness or that pregnant pause? It's nothing, Kathy says. What is there for dust or lack of purification to land on? There's nothing in that space. So, you know, this seems to be a different approach to, I don't know, awakening. Is that what we're going for? than what we have been practicing. And I emphasize the seems, because I don't know if it's different. I don't know if I'm just now getting what's been being taught. But you know, we have an MPP class on understanding purification. We've read Michael Singer's book on The Untethered Soul, which is about purification. You know, they mention purification here because it's being taught, right? And it's being taught by masters, and it's being taught by people for whom purification has been very helpful. So it just seems like this is another, you know, all roads lead to the truth, right? But it seems like this is another inroad on the truth. It's like, and for me at this point in whatever, my understanding, my life, my path, whatever it is, it seems like this is just really helpful because Papaji is talking about a spot before those thoughts arise, right? a spot, a place, a state, I don't know what to call it. So at that spot to abide, and I think he doesn't like that word either, but to abide in that spot, there is nothing to purify. And if I were to stay in that spot unceasingly, I'm done, right? That's the end of the road. That's the abiding in that emptiness. That's it. On the other hand, if I go out to eat with my sister and she says something that hurts my feelings, well, then maybe I need to do some root cause analysis and look at that. Again, Papaji, I think Papaji's saying, you don't have to hang out there for the next 10 years. Go to that spot before the thoughts arise, that place within you before thoughts arise, and you don't have to worry about purification. You're either in your thoughts, you're either in the marketplace, or in the circus, as Inner Ramana would say, or you're in the meadow. So just go to the meadow and just skip the marketplace altogether, and then you don't have to sort through all the contents of what you find there. So just stop it. Yeah, like the Bob Newhart video. Or, frankly, like I've been hearing Gangaji say for what however long I've been knew who Gangaji was. That's what she said. She said, Papaji told me just stop. And then the mind, the space after thought arises, wants to turn that over and figure out what that looks like and what it's made of and how I get there and what I do with it. But you see, that's already beyond the stopping space. That's already beyond the space where thoughts arise. Okay. So, let's move on. Yeah, and Cheryl writes, our practice is what will help with turning our attention away from those thoughts. Yeah, maybe. The truth of it is, that's what I've been working with. It's what I've been doing. Seems to have helped. Seems to have helped relieve the suffering. And perhaps, it helps to get you to a spot where you can go to the place before thought. I don't know. It has for me. I mean, that's been, if you look back at the like those family circus or family circle, whatever that was, where you can see where the kids ran all over town, right? The little dotted lines. So if you look at my little map, yeah, that's the way it seemed to have worked. Whether I needed to do that or not, I don't know. It's what I did do. Family circus, yeah. Okay, so let's move on to this next chapter and see what we see here. The next chapter is entitled, Who Are You? A new visitor was asked this question. Who are you? I'll give you 5 minutes because you are Indian. These others may think I treat you better because you are Indian and they are all foreigners. So I will give you 5 minutes for this question. The student responds, 5 minutes? I've been working on this question for 2.5 years. Papaji says, you're right. 5 minutes is too long. But you are a guest. I want to treat you well. He says, look, how far is it from Kanpur, where you came from, to here? student. About 90 kilometers, about 3 hours. Papaji, 3 hours? Now, why does it take 3 hours? Student, because of the distance. Papaji, very good, very good. So where is the I that is asking the question? And where is the I in who am I? I gave you 5 minutes to be polite, but there is no space, no distance. Your answer should take no time. Nice of them to draw a line to tell me where these. They got a little line in, across the middle of the page to tell me that's the end of that conversation, because I'm like waiting for more questions and answers, more erudition on on what the heck he's talking about. But again, I mean, I think it's what we just spent half an hour talking about. Yeah, because where is the I and who am I? Is gosh, and I was just reading Floyd Henderson was talking about this. I'm not sure I'm not sure I can find it. It's harder because I got Floyd on my Kindle, so I find it harder to. To get around in there. Oops, my YouTube's trying to start. Let me see if I can find it. Give me 1 minute. Yeah, I just not sure it's where I want it to be, right? So let me try and just tell you what he says. What he says is that so he says, where is the Papaji says, where is the I and who am I? It's like trying to you know, the proverbial dog trying to catch his tail. It's like trying to find the substance of a mirage. At one point, Floyd Henderson said it's like somebody was complaining about something. He said it's like saying, you know, you can't point to that for your suffering because it's like saying somebody stepped on my shadow and now my back hurts. You know, so, to look at where is the I and who am I, it's like really trying to say where is the substance in this illusion? What is there before the I is the question. Again, it's like we've heard them, the Zen koan, what was your face before you were born? You know, how can you ask who am I when there's no I to know? There's only a pregnant pause. There's only the potentiality, the energy of all of life. So when we say, who am I, you know, what we're often doing is looking to explain why Jacqueline exists. Why do I exist? I heard a little girl, saw a video with a little girl asking, asking Muji that yesterday, a little 5 minute video. And basically, his answer to her question was, let me ask you a different question. What is the one thing that you know for sure? And then together, the two of them answer that question. The one thing I know for sure is that I exist. Not that I exist as an I. It might be more accurate to say existence is. or isness is, or maybe just is. So this guy's like, I've been practicing all this time. He says 2.5 years. I could say 30 years. And I can't. I've been working on the question, "Who are you?" And I'm no closer to the answer than I was when I started. And Papaji's like, "There is no distance. There is no time requirement to come to the answer to that question. There's no why am I? There's no even who am I? There's only I am. Or am." He says, so where is the I that is asking the question? And where is the I in who am I? I gave you 5 minutes to be polite, but if there is no space, no distance, your answer should take no time. So he's talking about how there's no distance from the I who's asking the question to the I am-ness of who you are. So how could it take you 30 years or 3.5 years or whatever it was, 2.5 years to answer the question? He's pointing to the same thing, right, that we experienced a moment ago. There's no question to be asked. There's only the knowingness of it. All right. Hope you guys feel complete with that. I think I do. I think we'll move on to the next portion of this chapter. The questioner says, I was very touched yesterday when you spoke of obedience, living obedience every second, obedience to that every second. Papaji, yes. Student, obedience implies a duality, doesn't it? Papaji, it is your own self, with a capital S. It is your own self. Where's the duality? Student, only self, and actually there's no question mark there. Student says, only self. Papaji, you love yourself. Is it not obedience? The river merging, the river discharging into the sea, is it not obedience? Externally, you can call it obedience, going back to meet herself. You can call it obedience, or you can call it return to the source, according to your temperament. And the ocean is happy to receive you. If obedience is given to anyone else, then you call it duality. But where is duality? You have 2 hands, 10 feet, excuse me, not 10 feet, 2 feet. You have 2 hands, 2 feet, 10 fingers, a nose. How many parts to this body? But when you say I, Is it duality? When you see your face in the mirror, are there 2 persons? When you see truth, you know there has never been duality. Right from the beginning until the end of the universe. The student says, I was thinking of the self-creating multiplicity for its own enjoyment. I'm just wondering if I should, sorry for the long pause, But I'm wondering if I should actually back up to that paragraph or whether I should read through to the end. Because often, as we know, any of us who ever participated in a Course in Miracles group knows that you can spend an hour trying to figure out what something means, and then you read the next sentence and you go, oh, yeah, that's what it meant. But I do want to talk about this for a moment because I was just having this discussion this morning with a friend of mine, and about this whole notion of, and I talked about it last night in my Growing with NTI program with Connie, but about this notion that there's no, there's no benevolent force. There's no overseer. There's no, you love this. There is no God in the sense that, and this, see, this is what I'm struggling with right now. So just let me be clear about, I'm really struggling with this. That there's, if there's only oneness, it's not this one benevolent force and me, right? That's not oneness, that's two-ness. So, I was something came up on my feed this morning, or actually, I was getting rid of some old windows I had open, very old, because I saw Dr. David Hawkins talking about the final door. I listened to a little bit of that, and of course, he's talking about the finally giving up the self, and then he has a companion video or one that occurred in the same session. Where he is talking about being willing to die for God, to give up that self for God. And I'm like, gee, that sure sounds like two-ness to me, right? So this is yeah, so this is right on time for me, because this is what Papaji seems to be addressing. They're talking about, you spoke of obedience, living obedience every second. Obedience to that every second is the way this is written, and it's not a capital T, to that every second. So we don't get the benefit of what was actually said yesterday about obedience. Papaji again says, you love yourself, capital S self. Is it not obedience? So, and then he talks about the fact that a river discharging into the sea, they're not two different things. He's talking about this return home, obviously. And I have had that realization here about, two hands, 2 feet, 10 fingers, but they're all still part of this body. I don't, that I don't watch the hand do something and then, smack it, punish it for doing something, right? It's all one part of the one body. So this obedience, this, who do you pray to? This, there is no great benevolent force that's going to reward me for getting this right. Even though we talk about it in terms of, because of the limitations of language, even though we talk about it as surrender to God, giving up my life for God, who is there to give it up to? Only the self. And it's not a self that's greater than me. It's not a self that, of course it's greater than the little me, but it's, but the problem is, and the problem with our languaging, and the problem with the way we're set up to think is that even to say the words implies an other. So at one time, for me, there was great solace in the belief in, not necessarily the bearded guy, right, up there in the cloud somewhere. Right, the all-seeing, all-powerful, somebody that could swoop down and save me if I needed help, that could ensure that Indeed, all things in my life work together for my good. Sorry, I forget how I started that sentence. Seems like it was like I left something dangling there, but there is no other to pray to. There is no other to give up my life for. You know, Jesus said, the Father and I are one. Not meaning, hey, we're big buddies and we get to hang out together. Great pumpkin. Yeah, there is no great pumpkin. It's going to swoop in and make my Halloween perfect. So, you know, it's really interesting for me, and so that brings up for me this question of, well, what's it all about, Alfie, right? Well, if there is no if there's no greater entity that wants something from me, then what am I giving up and to whom and why? So it brings up all the questions. You can see this is percolating, right? You know, and so that's why I started today with the prayer that I did. Because there is, in fact, when I look, when I say, okay, so there's no rewards, there's no, you know, there's no, excuse me, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Come on in, cat. I know, you were locked out. You were not happy about it. There's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. If I grant you all of that, right, that I could work for my entire life towards this and not be rewarded for it. So why would you do it? And the point is, there is a why would you do it. And I find that, although I've told Regina repeatedly, it's not the reason. I know Regina says her initial prayer was truth at all costs. I don't even care. Just show me the truth at all costs. I don't even care if I like the truth when I get there. Just show me the truth. And I find that, you know what? There is the drive to know the truth at all costs. I mean, that's what our Vanilla Sky movie was about the other night, right? He didn't know what he was going to find when he jumped off the top of that building, when he went back into real life. But he wanted truth more than he wanted what he wanted. So that's the drive that we were talking about in the last chapter. All my life, even as a little boy, the desire for freedom has been stronger than all other desires. It doesn't really seem to be desire, to be a desire. It's more like longing. The desire for freedom is always there, burning. So while I've had thoughts about, I've conceptualized my spiritual path as a number of things, but most recently I've wanted to say, well, you know, at least there's the, if I get rid of this, then I will end my own suffering. And maybe there's this larger desire to end suffering for others, although I'm pretty selfish, maybe it's not that. But at the end of the day, I think, the end of today anyway, the end of this program, what seems to be arising for me is a real longing for the truth. Gee, you know, I want to, when I started this program, it's like I told you guys, I want to be radically honest. I want to be extremely authentic. Totally authentic is what I'm trying to say. So when I say that, I see the reason I'm mentioning this is because when I say that, I get this little question in my mind goes, yeah, come on. Do you really just want to know the truth, or do you want to stop your suffering? But I can tell you that pretty sure that blowback, that immediate blowback is an ego question. You don't really want truth. But I think that has to be the drive. I mean, because if you're not, gosh, what else are you left with? If that's not the desire, why would anybody do anything about anything ever? You know? You know, I can end suffering pretty quickly, right? I mean, if it's just about ending the suffering, I can do that. You know, I can lay in my bed all day. You know, my ex-mother-in-law, after her husband died, you all may have heard me tell this story. She tried to be by herself for a while and just couldn't. And one day she just laid down and died. There wasn't anything wrong with this woman. She just laid down and died. And it took like, I don't know, day, 2 days. So if it was just about ending the suffering, you know, there are remedies for that. So there has to be something beyond just the desire to end suffering, to end my own personal suffering, right? Dealing with the day-to-day BS. Seems like I'm. Seems like I'm full of questions without lots of answers, but I think that I think that we're arriving closer and closer to the next stop, truth, friends. And frankly, now that I sit with that, I can feel some real gratitude around that. And it's, I got to tell you, even as I look at that gratitude, it's like, I don't know, you know? Because I can, you know, and even in locating the gratitude, it's like, you know, maybe there's not a need to, but it's like that seems to come from somewhere other than the thinking mind, the gratitude. And, you know, and it's easy for me to go, oh, you know, that comes from my heart. Well, what does that even mean? It comes from my heart. Because when that gratitude came in, it seemed to be a chorus, you know, kind of like the old Greek chorus in the plays we read in high school or college. Yay! This chorus sings. So I don't know what that's all about. I don't know what that's all about. But I do feel the gratitude. I am grateful. I am grateful that I am frankly grateful to see that there is more to to my search, whatever you want to call it, to my journey, to my living, than a relatively selfish desire to end my own suffering. I don't know why it's been funny, but it is. Oh, gosh. So anyway, yeah, I think this is probably a good place to stop for today. I do want to express my gratitude for you guys. I can feel a certain lightness around these what seem to be quote unquote big questions, just by you know, by sharing them with you and by exploring them with you. And I want to particularly thank you guys for doing that exercise with me earlier. I think that that was really, really helpful. So, and for taking the mic and sharing. So, thank you. Again, I love you, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.